You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY, Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM, and in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours. What is success? What does it mean to be successful? Is it all about money? Or is it all about love, fame, attention? Or is it some secret other thing that we've yet to explore? I'm Brianna Wheeler, and I want to know what success means to the people that I think are successful. Because success can mean so many different things to so many different people. So let's discover a few new ways together. This is Success Stories. Hello, and welcome to Success Stories, a 30-minute radio program and accompanying podcast featuring Portlanders who have found success in unique and inspiring ways and have shifted Portland's economic, creative, and cultural landscape in the process. Today, I'm welcoming the best-selling author of How to Smoke Pot Properly, a highbrow guide to getting high, the creator and host of the podcast Great Moments in Weed History, the co-creator of the show Bon Appetit, a producer on the Hulu docuseries 420 Quick Hits, and whether you know it or not, one of the most prolific voices in weed advocacy and culture, David Bienenstock. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure. And whoever you're describing, I can't wait for him to show up. He sounds very successful.
Yeah, he's busy, so we called you instead. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, I guess when you line up 20 years of stuff into 5 seconds, maybe I've been more successful than I feel. So I'm very pleased to be on the show, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Absolutely thrilled to have you on the show. First became acquainted with you because I came to see your live show, The History of Weed, and was so blown away by your interpretation of not only like how to present this information as a live show, but like just how entertaining you were, how compelling you were, and how charismatic you were. Especially, you changed the way, I felt like you kind of smashed this archetype of a certain type of white stoner, white Gen X stoner. And I appreciate that.
Having the privileged position I have had as a writer, a journalist, a documentary filmmaker, etc., to have entree into this world and meet people, you know, from all walks of life is this terribly overused phrase, but I can't think of anything that lives up to that more than weed. And then when you start to look at the history, you know, even, you know, well-meaning people for far, far too long began the history of weed with, in the 1960s, a bunch of white people that, you know, and, you know, what I try to get across, especially in that show and on the podcast, is this is a 10,000-year history. It's very possible that cannabis was the first cultivated plant. You know, we went from foraging as a species, the idea being that this plant was so valued by our ancient ancestors that they were like, okay, we can't just wander around looking for this plant anymore. We have to figure out a way, you know, to have, if you've ever run out of weed and thought to yourself, you know, and you call a few dealers, I might be aging myself, young people, there wasn't always stores, and that we began cultivating plants and, in essence, creating a new era of human existence because of our deep attachment to this plant. And then tracing it through different spiritual uses, which is really the oldest history that we have available to us, because it really almost predates history, in a lot of these spiritual or religious traditions,
right,
you come to see it's from all over the world.
Right.
And that has to recontextualize your understanding of this plant and this culture, how we got here, and also just understanding prohibition as the anomaly.
Right. I guess it feels kind of novel to start that conversation the way that you did, that this conversation doesn't start in the 60s with a bunch of Hesh dudes coming up with 420, that it's much more complex. But how do you get from being, you know, reporting on cannabis culture at High Times to having this kind of, this breadth of knowledge about it? Like, do you, you're just a, what does this research process look like? Is it, you're collecting oral histories? Are you out here examining church texts? Are you out here examining spirit? Are you in the carrels of the library, you know, like getting down and dirty?
One of the great things to me about studying the history of weed is it's this rare combination of something that people are very passionate about. And it's, I always call it like the biggest subculture in the world, you know, and people really care about this. But the history of it has been suppressed, has been rewritten, has been erased. You know, one great example, the second episode of the podcast, Great Moments in Weed History, and this is going back 8 years, was about Maya Angelou. And she has this central story in her life that getting high, in her own words, in her own memoir, was the first step and the key moment in unwinding the trauma of her upbringing, which is wow. Really that trauma is the whole basis of her most famous work. And I got an email not long after that episode came out, and we had a very small listenership, you know, it was episode 2 of an independent podcast, from somebody who said, you know, I wrote my college thesis on Maya Angelou, and I never knew this. Now, first of all, I don't think you wrote a great college thesis.
Well, yeah, first of all.
but it, that really struck me that I'm on to something. And then I think the connection for people is so many people have been stigmatized or criminalized or both in their lives, their own lives or their family, around this plant. So that when you hear this alternate history, it is freeing, it is liberating to people. And that really inspires me to go really deep. And when we're talking about history, not the lived experience of somebody I might be interviewing, I'm a big old nerd, as I said. I love history in general, but I think what drives me to go as deep as I can on these stories is, like, you know, especially in the beginning, a feeling of if I don't, who else will? Right. I was reporting on weed at a time when maybe 4 people had that job,
right,
on planet Earth, and happily that has changed. But you know, when you're panning for gold in a river that no one's panned, it's easy to find in a way, and right, fascinating, and so I think of it as what I can really add to this. To me, a very important, you know, social justice movement. This prohibition of cannabis has destroyed people's lives, has destroyed families. You know, people are imprisoned, have their children taken away. And so, you know, that sense of community and pride and just understanding of ourselves as a culture is, I think, a powerful counterforce to that.
I'm compelled to ask why. I mean, you kind of said it yourself, you know, if not me, then who? But when you, were there ever moments of like self-examination where you had to have a conversation with yourself about being like a cis white guy in this space, like confronting the horrors of the war on drugs? Like what are the take homes there? And did they, were they like, how did they affect you in your day to day?
I think I want to answer. I want to start with something really personal, which is I like to say, and I'm going to say it the radio way. Weed is not a cure for being an a-hole. But it's a really good place to start. And that's sure from my experience. What was really profound for me in early experiences of cannabis was, on the one hand, it was like the first time I could laugh at myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get into like my own life trauma, but that was super profound.
Right.
But also, it was the first time that I could objectively look at myself, my own behavior, my own relation to other people, and see that a-hole in me.
Oh, wow.
So that's the personal level of that. And then to more to what you were asking about, you know, I think that anybody who is like me, a 50-year-old white guy, has either been coming to grips with that generally or sticking your head in the sand and ignoring the obvious lived experience of so many people around you. And so I don't think anybody should get a pat on the back for being minimally aware of the rest of the world's experience differing from yours. And in terms of reporting and in terms of telling stories, I think it's really important to choose stories with that in mind. But it's not hard because this is such a diverse culture of people. And I think centering other people's stories and not making everything about yourself is something that, you know, I increasingly strive towards. And I think ultimately, as I've, you know, gotten older and had opportunities trying to open the door for other people to tell their own stories.
Right. You have a very unique position. Like you just said, there were like, when you started writing about cannabis, there were like not that many people doing it, which affords you the unique position of seeing this landscape transform so fiercely. And I wonder like what the emotional impact of that is. Cause you say it yourself, like you've seen, or you've spoken to people that have had their kids taken away, that have lost their jobs, their livelihoods. Like the war on drugs is so traumatic, generationally impactful. What is like emotionally, how do you, in your position, process how you've seen this landscape change?
I think that the biggest change obviously is in the legal status.
Right.
And, you know, I am somebody who is pretty in love with weed and have a very critical view of capitalism.
Right.
And so sort of one of my favorite things and one of my least favorite things collided rapidly. And right. One of the things I like to say to just help people understand is like, from my perspective, everything that happened to America's small business and family farms over the course of 100 years happened with weed in 5 years.
Right.
So you can see these impacts. You can see this corporatization happening very rapidly. And I hear from a lot of people who are like, you know, I wrote an article once that said, you're not against legalization, you just hate capitalism, and that's okay. Because I think people have never seen it happen that fast and never seen it happen to their thing that they care so much about. And but to take a half a step back from that, having sat with as many people as I have who have had their lives deep, I don't want to say ruined, because everyone can redeem, you know, first of all, it's an outside force happening to you, but have had their lives deeply and terribly impacted by this prohibition. The fact of the matter is that legalization ends those arrests to, you know, 95-99%.
Right.
And so as upset as I can get around some of the economics of the legalization era. And as much as I will raise the flag for ethical outlaw behavior in that era of cannabis, we can't ever stop looking at those arrests as happening to real people.
Right.
And the macro of that is staggering. You know, there was a period in time when there was over 800,000 arrests in the United States for cannabis. The racial disparity in that can be 8-1, 12-1, depending on where you live. But it's 1-1 for stoners. You know what I mean? So we can't ever minimize that. And it also gives me a lot of hope. I like to say, if everything has had gotten as much better in the last 20 years as weed policy, we'd be living in a pretty, you know, compared to where we are now, we'd be pretty living in a pretty enviable timeline.
Right.
Utopia. So that keeps me really inspired. And I think, you know, we look at the macro of those 800,000 arrests. But when you look at the micro of individual people's stories, how egregious it is. And then what I like to ask people is, if you understand all that, you have to go one step further and ask yourself, what is going on in a society that wages a 100-year war against a beneficial plant at the cost of billions, if not $1 trillion, and the incredible toll paid in human suffering? And that includes not just arrests, but every person who vomited their way through chemotherapy when one hit of a joint would have or could have changed that dynamic. Right. That is a toll also paid in human misery.
Right. What are the roadblocks that you encounter in your research, in your like building this incredible wealth of knowledge?
Let me quickly say also, weed is super fun. Don't let me confuse anybody that I'm talking about two different things. And like, some of my favorite episodes of the podcast are like Willie Nelson smoked a joint on the roof of the White House, or about a movie called Ganjasaurus Rex. You know, weed is super fun, and it's about that marginalization and create what happens when you take people who have enough of a BS detector to see through this propaganda and who have this creative, stimulating plant as their ally, and who are crossing all kinds of cultural boundaries, racial, social, economic, geographic, and you push them into the margins and they create a culture in the margins. It's, to me, a very beautiful and life-affirming culture, and it intersects with music and film and art and literature and philosophy. And so that's the counterbalance. My original partner on the podcast, Abdullah Saeed, and I created great moments in weed history so that we wouldn't have to spend every episode going through the trauma of the darkest stories. When I first started at High Times, and this was 2002, and I already admitted to being 50, don't do the math, I was very young. My first sort of beat was the worst stories.
Was that by choice or was that by assignment?
I think I was probably a little bit of both. Again, certainly a feeling of, if I don't, who will? And I've always had an affinity for the underdog, if you will. I've always, I have a hard time. It gets really back to that original sense of like, this has been so helpful for me, and then you can look and see some, you know, and of course, as I've lived, I've been arrested. People very close to me have been arrested, and not just people I met through reporting. Mm-hmm. So it's very personal to me, you know, I did have a passion for telling those stories. And I think that, you know, there was a real sense at that time, you know, people would say, why are you trying to legalize weed? That's never going to happen. And now, and then there was a period where people said, why are you wasting your time trying to legalize weed? That's inevitable. And now people are like, you know, but half the country, it's still illegal. But, you know, there was a sense, and a very important part of the, let's just say, drug war reform movement of people trying to, and, you know, beyond weed to the entire war on drugs, that if we all put on suits and if we just have the right statistics and we just explain to everybody how messed up this is, that'll create change. And that's a really important part of it. Mm-hmm. But telling stories and putting a face on this, and I didn't invent that. But that's where I felt that I could bring something to the table, to sit with people, to try to understand what happened to them.
Right.
And to try to present it to the world in a way that destigmatizes.
Right. All right. So what's the imposter syndrome quotient here? So you have an established seat at the table. I often see, like, the work that you're doing, you're in the room with big names, media juggernauts. Like, when you're in those spaces, do you feel intimidated or do you feel like you've earned your place?
I'm not one to get starstruck or kind of shrink from the moment. If I, you know, I'll be at the risk of being immodest or something. And that comes from having done this a lot.
Right.
I think in terms of, like, you know, we talked a little bit about what does success mean and maybe not. I think the media landscape has changed a lot.
Right.
And in ways that I think most people realize. But if you've lived it and you've tried to make your living doing this, it has become very, very difficult. If you know somebody who writes for a living or tries to, give them a ring. they're probably having a rough one.
Oh yeah.
And I'll just say without kind of trash talking anybody, and it's like newer people and younger people, and that's always been part of it. And to your point, I don't want to be a curmudgeonly 50-year-old white guy, but like, when I look at, like, the most successful examples of weed media creators now, I was like, all right, I got to listen. No one will know what this show is. So I'm not going to give any clues. But, like, I'm like, well, this show is really big and it's, you know, got a big audience and they're making money, which is one, you know, measure of success. I'm not trying to make a killing, but I'd love to make a living as I have for a long time. And I'm like, I better, you know, let me listen to this show. And I, you know, this is a weed show. I promise you, this is how it started. It's two guys and they're co-hosts of this podcast. Hey, bro, you're wearing a hat today, huh? And the guy's like, yeah. He's like, we're both wearing hats. We're hat brothers. Not ironic. Maybe 4 minutes of sustained discussion of the fact that they both are wearing hats. And so it's like, if that's success,
then we're good to chat.
You know, and I want to say, like, I've had people who have subscribed to my podcast on Patreon for 8 years. Every once in a while, and it's like $5 a month for 8 years.
Adds
up. I'm like, are you sure? Like, I'm sure it didn't seem like a lot, $5 a month at a time. But, like, you know, there's a little thing that shows you, like, how much life. And so it's like, you know, the depth of the relationship with whatever audience I have and have maintained, I really value. And, like, if that is a measure of success, I feel extremely successful. And when I get emails, some of the nicest emails I've gotten are the most meaningful to me. are people who are like, I didn't start smoking pot until, you know, I'm a 48-year-old woman and I didn't start smoking pot until I had some medical issues come up and I found I really loved it, but I can't tell anybody. And like listening to this show is my having a sesh.
Oh.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
I can't eat it.
It doesn't pay the rent.
And so I'm going to quickly say to anybody in the Portland, or this is just to be real, like, if you're like, hey, that guy sounds interesting, but I don't think he would want this job in town, because I might. Like, info@greatmomentsinweedhistory.com. If it's fun, if there's people around, if you know, it's a steady paycheck, like, you know, that's kind of where I'm not ashamed, you know, and things come and go, you know, right. I worked on a Hulu series last year. That was a windfall and a really amazing project, and working with incredible team. Jimmy Kimmel was the executive producer. Like, I'm not being, you know, but it comes and goes.
Right.
And, you know, I'm trying to start this, live show, The History of Weed. I want to shout out Kickstand Comedy, where I put it on a couple times in Portland, and I know that they have a relationship with X-Ray. Mm-hmm. I love X-Ray. I'm besties, an X-Ray besties. Subscriber. But you know, it comes and goes, and it ebbs and flows. But yeah, like, do you have a cool bookstore and you need somebody to work there that's a big old nerd? Do you want somebody to help you program events at a community space? I you know, like, info@greatmomentsinweedhistory.com. So
you heard it,
you know,
chat.
You know, I think that word success, and I think it's a really, really interesting framing for your show. And I think it's really important to define that word and not have that word define us. And capitalism, of course,
exactly,
you know, is so reductive of a way to have a, like, a literal scoreboard. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine, everybody. If you want to donate, if you want to subscribe to the podcast,
here come the care packages.
That's one thing, but, you know, I'll pick up a check, like, I'm fine.
But, I'm glad to hear,
you know,
that.
I love a little steady something, and I you know, it's got to be fun. It's got to have a community. I'm not ready to, you know, do just any old thing.
Of course not. Big thanks to this week's guest, David Bienenstock. Check out his LinkedIn if you would like to hire him. Don't forget to follow us at Success Stories PDX on socials and learn more about me at briannawheeler.com. All right, I'll talk at you next week. And until then, remember, success is what we make it.